Hello, and you are listening to EcoJustice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles, a project of SoCal 350 Climate Action. Our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Welcome, I'm Jack Eight. On today's show, solstice celebration story, Nutcracker and the Shapeshifter. I will be reading my short story based on The Nutcracker, a two-act ballet with an 1892 score by Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky. The libretto was adapted from E.T.A. Hoffman's 1816 story, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King. Here we present my own pro-peace and environmental reimagining of that story for today. Published in 2022 in the Fifth Fedora Anthology, published by Borda Books. We also feature excerpts from Tchaikovsky's ballet, The Nutcracker, Opus 71, recorded by the Rotterdam Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Yannick Nezet-Seguin, featuring the boys' choirs, three of them, Ridman, Riverinland, and Waterland, conducted by Ari Hoek. Nutcracker and the Shapeshifter, a short story by Jack Eight. The Solstice Celebration. On the shortest day of the year, John Gundert and his wife Susanna gathered the children in the living room opening to a view from a bluff over the Pacific Ocean. The two young ones, Rolf and Elisa, were excited by the prospect of the solstice holiday present wrapped in what looked like maps of the world, and Master Bernoulli had dropped by to bequeath his yearly tribute to the health and well-being of the household. The old man's given name was Christoph, that he seemed to have abandoned. No one really knew where the title Master came from, and the family just called him Uncle. He was a confidant of Gundert's late father, and had always been a bit of an enigma, an artist, sculptor, a storyteller of the outrageous and unbelievable. He was known to seek wild places where he could live for a little money as he engaged in what he called import-export business. He had a way of getting around in the world. Elisa, a cute curly brown-haired girl with short bob, sweet brown eyes, looked to her daddy and said, "What do you think Uncle has brought us?" "Something marvelous, no doubt," answered Gundert, but he was not so sure that his definition of marvelous coincided with Elisa's. Uncle's appearance had taken a weathered turn at age 60. He had a sun-wrinkled face, a wild eye, and a thatch of graying hair spreading from a wool cap he wore, a Croydon herringbone plaid that sat rakish on top of that head, perpetually engaged in scheming. His long cashmere overcoat with wide lapels was a few sizes too large on a body accustomed to indulgence of the fine arts of living, so his presence was grand. Quite the skilled craftsman, he could create and repair all manner of electronic and analog intricacies, though his fine artistry with always a touch of abstract esoteric mystery most inspired the children. Gundert's wife, Susanna, offered to take Uncle's coat, but he shrugged her off. She then retorted, "Okay then, what can I bring you to drink?" "How about a scotch, dear Susanna, to start the solstice commemoration?" "Yes, get him the single malt," added Gundert, and Susanna narrowed her eyes. She was not always a fan of Uncle, not comfortable with him drinking around the kids. "We keep it just for you, Uncle," she said, not looking at him. When Susanna delivered the drink, she rang a bell that sprung the children running toward a table arranged with wrapped presents before the window that opened to the sea. They yearned to discover what Uncle had brought them. When Rolf, the blonde blue-eyed son, tore apart the old maps Uncle had used as wrapping paper, they could see his creation, a statue or doll, 3 feet tall with a round head, grotesque face, goggle eyes, and a red mouth with razor teeth. The children gasped when they saw it. "This doll is something else, Uncle," said Gundert. He knew his wife was not thrilled with the gift. "What is it?" asked Rolf, standing back from it. He did not seem impressed either. "Rolf," said Uncle, "this chap will be leading the revolution." "What sort of revolution?" countered Susanna, an emigre from Kuwa, who did not approve of revolutions generally, though her family stuck it out for decades. "I think young Rolf is more about tactics," added Uncle with a wide smile. As he pronounced his words almost toward the living room, ocean view, picture window, the invisible audience of the beyond, where the sun would shortly begin to gain strength and take back the balance of light in the world. "This celebratory fellow, he is called Kugelkopf. He is sort of a clown, a trickster, and his spherical head is a nod to the entire planet. He is among us to upend established orders that must be overcome." "Does this come from a tradition?" asked Gundert, humored. "Who gives it such meaning?" Uncle only nodded and did not respond. Susanna did not hide her disapproval, running her hands through her long black curly hair, a familiar gesture for her when agitated. "I'm not sure we're about upending any established orders in my house, Uncle." Uncle smiled, but did not acknowledge her derision, as his usual response to her skepticism was to smile through it. "The thing we must grapple with is our seriousness. Every day we assume tomorrow will be like yesterday. What happens when we do not recognize tomorrow?" This is where we turn to Kugelkopf for answers. "Why is he dressed in women's clothing?" asked little Rolf. "He is a dancer, and his clothing is androgynous." "Not a woman's or a man's." Uncle had draped a colorful hat with ribbons over the bare, bald head. "He is a warrior disguised in bright, flowery colors and has mirrors dangling at his arms." Rolf was looking at other presents that might interest him. "He's no warrior. Where are his weapons? How can he defend himself from attacks with bullets and knives? I want to see how fast that painted head would melt when the rains fall. He would blow over in the winds that whip off the ocean this time of year. And what happens when the fires come down from the hills in the summer? He would burn to a crisp. He needs a metal shield. That's not a recipe for winning a revolution." Rolf picked up his favorite armored toy, who carried a rifle, a Nutcracker soldier. "Commander Nutcracker will kill that ball head in the blink of an eye." Kugelkopf had a drawl look on his spherical head. He did not cast his eyes toward any of them. Nutcracker, on the other hand, seemed ready to take him on, just waiting for the word from Rolf. "Rolf has a point," added Susanna, which only made Uncle smile wider. "It seems like a random talisman you've gifted my children. It does not seem appropriate." "I like Kugelkopf," daughter Elisa spoke up. At 9, she was 3 years younger than Rolf and had a more giving, let's say indulgent, nature. "He is very cute, though I should say something about him reminds me of you, Uncle, as if he could go out in the world and do anything he wanted, but you don't wear ribbons." Both Gundert and his wife laughed knowingly at this comment, but Uncle cocked his head, maybe embarrassed. Gundert stepped up. "It's time for dinner. Kugelkopf is for the both of you. But Elisa, you oversee his welfare and keep his ribbons dry in the rain and protect him from wildfires. Now let's put him in the cupboard so he can eat." Of course, John Gundert had his Christmas trees, carved wooden placards depicting a pine and an oak, creations that Uncle had fashioned in the past. Uncle was adamant that they celebrate the solstice because of the solar turnaround. The old fellow quoted the book of Genesis that the Garden of Eden was the backdrop of the birth of any savior, with need for bearing fruit and seeds, acorns, and pine nuts. "The Yuletide is here," he added with his usual nod to the pagan precursor of the return of the sun. "The ancients of northern Europe saw this time of great darkness as when the veil between the living and the dead was at its most transparent." Gundert knew Susanna as a nominal Catholic, was okay with solstice celebrations before actual Christmas, as she saw it as a time for redemption. She had no patience for the anti-religious zealots back in Cuba who held power. Unfortunately, she had some questions about Uncle's previous solstice present of wooden idols on horseback fashioned after the three magi from the east, the wise magician kings following the evening star to deliver gifts for the savior of the world. Susanna celebrated Three Kings Day, believing these kings were astrologers who foretold the advent of a divine being coming into the world to save us all from this mess. El Día de Reyes is something Uncle understood quite well as he had traveled to Puerto Rico to study with the santeros, specially trained woodcarvers who helped him create santos de palo, wooden saints in the form of the three magi. He carved the first two in the manner of the Boricua santeros with dark brown complexioned elder named Melchior from North Africa on his white horse and a young bronze indigenous Gaspar on a black horse. Both were fitted out in crowns, capes, and regalia. His third magus, however, was a female, as he called her the Pale Nerthus from Europe, riding on a red horse. Susanna did not appreciate Uncle taking liberty with tradition, even if these were Caribbean versions already reimagined from the biblical stories. Their races and ethnicities and the lands they represented, as well as the horses, not camels, they rode, spoke to the colonized Americas. In that way, Uncle must have seen the door was open to recreate. Uncle had been quick to note that while Melchior brought gold fit for a king and Gaspar incense made from a tree sap for godly powers, only Nerthus could wield the power of the earth. She brought tree leaves, bark, and roots for healing, and of course anointing and embalming the dead. But for Uncle, she represented a sort of mother nature between regeneration and destruction that went well beyond the other two magi. This is what concerned Susanna. Susanna saw santeros through the Cuban lens, practitioner of Santeria, the Afro-Caribbean way of the saints based on West African Yoruba beliefs and traditions. The santeros in Puerto Rico, Uncle protested, only dealt in Christian wooden saints carving. She had said to him at the time, was there ever a female king bearing gifts to the king of the Jews in the Bible? No. Susanna had mixed blood, the European with African, and even claimed indigenous Taino. She came of age in a culture that understood Santeria, like most everyone on the island, without necessarily practicing it. She had told her husband, each of these statues that Uncle carved for us in Cuba, they represent traditional deities from La Regla de Ocha. This is how she referred to the religion, meaning the rule of the deities. The female doll is Yemaya, not just any queen bearing gifts. She is goddess of the sea. I don't think she's appropriate for Christmas. As a result, Susanna stored, or more accurately, stashed the statues in the side garage that remained closed and locked most of the year. Susanna did, however, transfer them to the living room cabinet to be displayed on the holidays. Gundert pulled Uncle aside, worried about this new creation. Where did you get the idea for Kugelkopf? What is its purpose? What can we expect from that doll? Gundert had to admit to himself he agreed with his wife. Those three magi seemed to be alive and seeking out some unseen savior of the world when they let them loose during the holidays. Uncle took a small sip from his glass of single malt scotch and looked upon Gundert with a sort of pity. Do you have expectations from art? In Bavaria, we have carved wooden cult figurines called pole gods. There's that word again, cult. Are you a member of a cult, Uncle? The pole gods are, yes, my tradition, but as you know, my father's people were Roma. So I might take issue with you using the word cult. Let us say we have traditions that predate the Christian perspective. Apologies, Uncle. Uncle's eyes brightened nevertheless. The Bavarian pole gods are living beings represented by the wooden figures. They bring protective magic. I meant the gift as a deflector of misfortune and a beautification of your home. Okay, Gundert said reluctantly. Thank you, Uncle. We do appreciate what you bring to the children and all of us. They all finally sat down to solstice dinner, and sure enough, Elisa brought Kugelkopf to stand by her. Must we have these characters eating with us? Asked Susanna to her daughter. He will be quiet, she answered, while looking into the round black eyes of the doll. Dad told me to keep a watch on him. Susanna shot a disapproving glance at her husband, and he sort of shrugged while Uncle gave it all his approval. Hey listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying EcoJustice Radio. I'm on KPFK Los Angeles. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out our previous shows and guests and get connected with us on social media. Today you're listening to Solstice Celebration Story, Nutcracker and the Shapeshifter. I'm your host, Jack Eight, and we present an excerpt of my own pro-peace environmental reimagining of the E.T.A. Hoffman 1816 story, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King. New chapter, Strange Midnight Happenings. It was getting late, almost midnight. Uncle had left long ago, and still the children played next to the cabinet of dolls and other toys. She told them they must now go to bed, and Rolf was agreeable. My soldiers must rest for the great battle ahead. He left his toys and departed to his bedroom. Elisa pleaded, Mom, can I just have a little bit more time? You'll be crabby tomorrow, my dear, her mother cautioned. It's a holiday. We're off school. Well, you are pretty sensible, Elisa, so get yourself to bed as soon as you can. She left her alone in the room and retired for the night. With her mother and Rolf out of the way, Elisa set Kugelkopf down in front of her and said, Don't you worry. You should not be angry with my brother for his silly words. As a soldier, he has become hard-hearted and single-minded, but he's a good boy. I will take care of you with your ribbons and finery. Be sure of that. And Uncle Bernoulli will be sure to keep watch over you should something happen. She could not finish what she had to say, as the mere mention of Uncle had Kugelkopf making an even stranger face that he had already, eyes aglow. At that moment, Rolf's commander Nutcracker advanced towards Kugelkopf. I don't like the look of you, he spoke in a loud, gruff voice. I'm the boss around here, and what I say goes. It was true. Nutcracker ruled the world of their living room with an iron fist. She knew that the three Magi could never come out and play because he had threatened to tear them apart if they endeavored to emerge from the cupboard. She knew they had a journey to make. She had heard the stories, even from her mother, but that authoritarian Nutcracker would not consider it. A phalanx of troops Rolf had compiled over the years backed Commander Nutcracker. Three electric rechargeable scaramouches led the advance, clown-like ruffians committed to the skirmish, Pantaloon, a skinny buffoon in his tight-fitting trousers, who came to life through a set of batteries, stepped up as sergeant-at-arms. Four wind-up chimney sweeps held to the flanks in the four directions, fitted out in their aprons, armed with brushes to battle invading forces. The secret weapon, the devilish trickster servant to the powerful Nutcracker, was the solar-charged Harlequin, dressed in red and yellow checkers. And finally, the sad clown puppet Piero, draped in white, brought up the rear column, the last line of defense for Nutcracker's considerable force. This imposing bunch chanted together, Yes, Commander Nutcracker, we shall follow you unto death, to battle, to victory, to face down this interloper, this frightening round face of Der Kugelkopf, seeming to come in from the wilderness. Nutcracker stepped up on a box and pronounced, Bow down, ball head, and show your allegiance to the programmatic action we enforce in this household. We only accept doll people who assent to my rule. Elisa weighed in. Oh, my dear Kugelkopf, best to fall in line behind the puppet Pierrot and that troublemaker Harlequin. I pledge to protect you and don't want to see you attacked by Rolf's posse of troublemakers. laughed Kugelkopf. I will honor your favor, Elisa. That much is true. Instead, Kugelkopf showed his guile by launching into a dance. He stepped back, leapt forward, and kicked his legs around. All the soldiers marveled at the surprise show of dexterity. A beat of a drum sounded from somewhere unseen, tap, 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 which unsettled Nutcracker's troops and made the commander begin to pace. Again, Kugelkopf stepped back, leapt forward, and the colorful ribbons made a vision like a rainbow, swirling back then forth, tap, 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 tap. The beautiful display mesmerized Elisa, and she felt with dread what was surely coming. Who is playing the drums? Demanded Nutcracker. Kugelkopf swirled again, closer to the commander, the rainbow swirl spinning just before him. Suddenly, Nutcracker swung his sword and caught Kugelkopf in mid-swirl, chopping off his right arm. He tumbled and rolled into the corner, ribbons flying, which made Elisa screech in fright. "What have you done, Nutcracker? Oh, my poor Kugelkopf!" From the floor, seeming utterly defeated, Kugelkopf moaned and held up his last arm. Was he surrendering to Nutcracker? With this motion, Elisa saw some gray, fat animal emerge from the wall. It was the wood rat. Was he playing the percussion? She knew this fellow lived in the attic above her bedroom and had heard that tap, 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 tap many times before, though she had only caught sight of him once when the neighbor's dog snuck through their fence and into the backyard, scaring Woodrat out of hiding behind the storage shed. She knew that rat was always there. She had feared he would chew up their entire attic with the constant nightly noise he made, biting at the rafters and rearranging the insulation. She never dared reveal his hidden workshop to her mother, fearing the onslaught of poison that would result in his annihilation. With the wood rat rushing in, Nutcracker said, "I will finish you off later, Ballhead," and he stepped toward the new invader. In from the front yard jumped Madame Raccoon, followed by Sister Possum and Sir Skunk. Elisa thought she was seeing things, wondering if the squirrels would show up as well. How could they have entered the house? What if her mother saw this display of wild varmints on her prized carpeting? The animals charged upon the wall of soldier toys. However, it did not go well, as the scaramouches jumped at Madame Raccoon and scared her from advancing. Pantaloon made Sister Possum hiss, which usually was enough for her to win any skirmish, but not tonight. And she was turned back. The chimney sweep surrounded Sir Skunk on four sides, so his spraying weapon only worked on one of them. Sir had to retreat forthwith. The whole world smelled like skunk spray. Her father would permanently ground her for letting all these animals into the house. "Bring up the reserve," shouted Kubelkov from his injured spot on the floor. "Coyotes, mountain lions, deer, not even sea lions who live nearby on the beach. Where are you?" He was still hoping for fresh troops from outside. None appeared. Elisa worried the three magi might venture into this skirmish, but they stuck to the barracks. She backed up in horror and smashed her elbow into the glass cabinet door, shattering it, dripping blood on the carpet. She fell to the floor beside herself. The last thing she remembered seeing was Woodrat getting slashed at by Nutcracker as he drove the invader straight back into the crack in the wall hidden by bookshelves from whence he came. Nutcracker waved his sword in celebration of the victory, and all the marauders yelped and strummed on zithers and pounded their own drums. Oh, what would happen to poor Kugelkopf? She must have fainted in all the chaos. Elisa's malady. Elisa woke in her bed, her mother hovering over her. An unknown man was in her room, but she realized it was Dr. Perez. "She awakens," he said. Did you see Gugelhoff? Was her first question. I'm not sure why you ask, her mother answered, half angered, half relieved that Elisa had awakened. Now that you mention it, yes, Rolf found him in the mess that was the living room. I came down just after midnight to discover you had passed out, surrounded by toys strewn everywhere, pleading, holding that ugly doll that Uncle gave you. Oh, Mommy, there had been a battle between Nutcracker and... Elisa trailed off. She refused to tattle Woodrat's cover. She was sure her mother would hire a team of exterminators to seek out and destroy one by one Madame Raccoon, Sister Possum, and Sir Skunk, and all their families. Entire squirrel households would end up as collateral damage. She could not bear to let that happen. Dr. Perez interrupted, "Doesn't matter now. You have a deep cut in your arm and now must rest." "You could have sliced an artery and bled out, my little dear." Her mother's eyes were wide with fear for her daughter. "What is this battle that you speak of? This place still smells like skunk. They must be going crazy out there. I never should have left you alone with those evil dolls that Uncle has brought into this home." With that, her father entered the room and pulled Dr. Perez aside for a few private words. Then he said to Elisa, "Gugelkopf's body was severely damaged. Do you know how this might have happened?" Elisa gulped. "I have no idea, Daddy," she lied. He moved closer to her, almost in interrogation. "Did Rolf come down again last night and do it?" He looked to Mother and said, "Maybe he had his troops doing late maneuvers and things got out of hand. It looked like a dog bit him. And if we had a dog, then this would all make sense." "Who cut off Kugelkopf's arm?" her mother added. "He must have fallen over when I hit the cabinet. I'm sorry, do you think Uncle could fix him?" Just when she said his name, Uncle made his appearance. "I wanted to see how our little patient is doing." Uncle, at this moment, appeared like a doll himself. The way he moved his right arm, the very one that Nutcracker had chopped off. Then Rolf entered and pronounced, "My dear Commander Nutcracker has told me last night he had a pitched battle with the forces of darkness. Nutcracker upholds all that is good in the world. Order, government, democracy, civilization. When such a strong representative is attacked, bad things are here. Chaos, destruction." "Oh, come on, Rolf," said Daddy. Where do you get all this rhetoric?"
"Military computer games," answered Mommy. Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, Solstice Celebration Story, Nutcracker and the Shapeshifter. Thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio, SoCal350, and Wilder Utopia. If you like what you've heard and you want others to be informed, you know what to do. Subscribe and share the episode. Project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on KPFK, KPFT, all major podcast apps, and at ecojusticeradio.org. Executive producer and host, myself, Jack Eit, co-host Jessica Aldridge, co-host Carrie Kim, an engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
The Bradcast.
Experts have said that the case has little chance of success at the Supreme Court, much like the numerous other GOP election lawsuits that are pending in battleground states. But then again, those experts, they are just guessing. They are hoping.
With your host, Brad Friedman, and producer, Desi Doyen.
There's enough going on right now. There are enough X factors still remaining that that's one I'd rather not contemplate.
Correct. You are, as usual, correct, Desi Doyen.
Tune in to The Bradcast every Monday at 3 p.m. right here on KPFK.
ICE is escalating deportation operations around the Los Angeles area. But if you are stopped by ICE officers, you have constitutional rights, regardless of your immigration status. If you or someone you know has been detained or wants to report ICE, more information is available at CIRLA at 888-624-4752 for legal help and resources. It is bilingual. More information at CHIRLA.org.